Hi, everybody. I'm Bailey.
I'm Drew.
I'm Lacey.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister. Good morning.
Morning.
Alright, so we're about to get into our third and final episode on Ted Bundy, thank God. How's everyone doing today?
Good. That's all. Okay. There hasn't been much of the day yet, so.
Well.
I had a terrible night last night, if that helps.
Oh, no, me too. How was your night?
Was she asking me how my night was? Because I just said it was terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where we were waiting to elaborate.
Oh.
Why was it terrible?
Well, so I went to bed at 11. My baby woke me up at 11:30. And then he woke me up at 12:30. And then my 2-year-old woke me up at 1:30 to tell me that she pooped, but she didn't.
Oh.
So I told her to go back to bed.
A prank.
And so then I went back to bed, and then my baby woke me up at 2:30.
It's kind of rude of those kids.
Yes.
I think the oldest one should get a reward today for not waking you up at all.
Yeah. Well, she started the day at 6, so.
It's also kind of disrespectful.
Actually, no, that's not true. She came to my bed at 5:30, and I said, we are not leaving this room until 6. That's where I draw the line. Tired of going out into the living room and it's all dark.
Got it.
Okay. I got a bowl of cereal.
Bailey, why did you have a bad night?
I've been having like bad insomnia on and off the last like few weeks.
Probably because you're working overnight.
Yeah, but my last overnight shift was Tuesday.
Yeah.
It messes with your chemistry.
I don't know.
That's like a thing. They did a lot of research. The most unhealthy people are the people who work day shift and night shift, and they go back and forth. If you work consistently night shift, your body can adapt to that, and then it's okay. It's not great because your body wants to be awake when the light is out. But it's the people that are bouncing back and forth that are unhealthy.
That's bad. Well,
my body needs to get it together. Yeah, so I couldn't fall asleep until, well, I forced myself to fall asleep at 4 a.m. So that's going to bode well for my 12-hour shift later.
If you can force yourself to fall asleep, why didn't you force yourself to fall asleep earlier?
Because at that point, I like literally wasn't tired. Like, I tried. And was just sitting staring at the ceiling, and then would go on my phone and like do puzzles or something to like tire my mind out. And then eventually it was just like, it's now or never. So
when you said staring at the ceiling, I got the Bo Burnham song. Staring at the ceiling, waiting for this feeling to go away.
Okay, so we're gonna start with a quote today. This is from Ted Bundy. It goes, I haven't blocked out the past. I wouldn't trade the person I am or what I've done or the people I've known for anything. So I do think about it. And at times it's a rather mellow trip to lie back and remember.
Sounds like a lack of remorse to me. I wouldn't trade my murdering rampage for anything.
It was a really mellow trip. There's a lot of... His perception is so fun.
That's how he helps himself fall asleep at night. Taking a mellow trip down memory lane.
Maybe that's what I need to do next time. From the last episode, we talked about Lake Sammamish, where he took two victims at the same time. After this event, Liz, his girlfriend, at the time grew suspicious of him, but was like turned away from police. They were like, nah, he's a clean-cut college student, he's fine. Bundy moved to Utah and was continuing and accelerating until August 1975 when he was pulled over. Excuse me. After being charged with evading a police officer, the investigator started tying murders and specifically an attempt of kidnapping to him. In Utah, he was charged with the attempt of assault and kidnapping of Carol DeRoche. That's his car. After he was convicted, he was sent to Colorado for a murder case of Karen Campbell. And that's when he escaped, not once, but twice. The first escape, he was gone for only a few days, and then he was moved to a different facility where he escaped out of a vent. And that's where I left you before. So we're just going to hop right back in.
Yeah, I know we're talking about the case. Neither of us had known before that he had escaped jail even one time. So the two escapes was brand new for and exciting.
Yeah, yeah. So he was free for 15 hours before it was discovered that he had escaped from this Glen Springs, Colorado prison. Supposedly when he was free initially, he was walking up and down streets for hours trying to find a car to steal. Once he found one, he drove through a blizzard right past a police station. He eventually got stuck in a blizzard, met a fellow driver, lied himself in the car with the driver, saying that his wife was having a baby in Denver and he needed to get there. They both made it to Vail before the blizzard got too bad. Bundy was able to score a Trailways bus trip to leave Vail. When he made it to Denver, he shared a cab with three other men to the airport and then hopped on a flight to Chicago. So, like, he moved very quickly when he, I mean, you also want to when you escape, I guess. But was able to literally get, like, states across. He made it to Ann Arbor, Michigan, when they finally announced his escape. And he was actually watching the Rose Bowl in a bar when the alert was, like, going out. And at that point, he was, like, 1,400 miles away from Colorado, or that prison. So, he got pretty far pretty quick.
Yeah.
So that was, damn, what was the date of that? Hold on. So that was at the end of 1977. By like January of 1978, he had settled into a new apartment in Tallahassee, Florida, where he was going by a new name called Chris Hagen. He enjoyed Florida State University's campus and would join random lectures. Because it's the 70s and people can just come on campuses. And he survived off of stolen cards and stealing things for his apartment. So on the 15th of January, 1978. Trying to figure out how to say this Greek word.
Ooh, Greek.
Yeah, it's the... Hold on. The Chi? C-H-I?
Chi.
Chi Omega House was a sorority on Florida State's campus. At around 3 a.m., again, January 15th, Nita was dropped off her house by her boyfriend after attending a keg party on campus. As she approached the home, she noticed the door was wide open. When she got inside, she heard someone running upstairs and decided to duck out of the way as she heard someone running down the stairs. She watched a man with a knit blue cap pulled over his eyes, holding a log with a cloth around it, running down the stairs and out the door. Concerned for burglarization, she went to her roommate, Nancy, Nancy and Nita were going to their house mother's room when another roommate, Karen Ann Chandler, staggered down the hall, her head soaked in blood. Nancy went to Karen while Nita woke their house mother and went to check on another roommate nearby, Kathy Kleiner. Kathy was found in her room alive, but covered in blood from open wounds on her head. Ted had come into this house with a heavy oak log and went room by room beating sleeping women.
Holy shit.
Why? Karen, why?
I don't know.
He was on a spree. He was spreeing.
He wasn't. He was obeying at this
pace. He was now. It's hard to stop. You know, he was doing, like we talked about how many he was doing so quickly. Now he just has to stop so he can hide. No.
This is definitely like where he starts to like spiral. So he gets really like messy. Karen Ann Chandler was 22. She was sleeping when the door opened and Bundy walked in to her room. He tripped and actually woke Kathy, because they were roommates. As Karen began to wake up, Bundy began hitting her. She had a skull fracture, a broken jaw, broken arm, and multiple broken facial bones and crushed fingers.
Jesus.
Kathy, her roommate, was 20, and Bundy broke her jaw in three places, tearing her right cheek and causing her to bite her tongue almost in half. Which sounds horrifying.
Yeah. I don't like
As the police came and they continued to search the house, they found two girls dead in their rooms, still lying in their beds. First was Lisa Levy. She was found first. She was 20 years old, literally about to turn 21 next month on February 1st. It was determined in her autopsy that she had been beaten on the head with a log, raped, and strangled. They found bite marks on her butt and one of her nipples. Her nipple had been so heavily bitten that it was almost severed completely off. Ugh. She was also sexually assaulted with a hairspray bottle. Margaret Bowman was 21 from Hawaii. They believe that she was attacked first around like 2:45 a.m., She suffered similar fatal injuries, but she had not been sexually assaulted and showed no signs of bite marks. She was strangled and possibly garroted by a pair of pantyhose found in her room. She was also beaten on the head so severely that her skull was splintered and a portion of her brain was exposed.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Margaret and Lisa showed no signs of struggle. And none of the other survivors could really offer any type of, like, account because they were all asleep during the attack. Shockingly and unfortunately, Bundy was not done this night. He then broke into an apartment just blocks away from the sorority house of a girl named Cheryl Thomas, another student of FSU. Cheryl was home after a night at the disco. Because it's the 70s, with her friends when Bundy entered her apartment through the window. Her housemates, who lived on the other side of the wall, Debbie and Nancy, heard a commotion and called her apartment, but with no answer. Thankfully, they decided to call the police. Bundy had escaped before authorities arrived, but Cheryl survived the attack. When the police arrived, they found Cheryl in her room, sitting on her bed. Her face was starting to swell. She was somewhat conscious and half nude. She had a broken jaw, a severed nerve in her left ear, forever leaving her with hearing imbalance problems. Which, if anyone's ever had like vertigo or the spins even, no thanks. That sounds horrible.
My dad had vertigo one time and actually thought he was having a heart attack. That's how intense it was.
Yeah. It's awful. Police were able to get a blood type from the assailant, sperm samples, and fingerprint smudges. Unfortunately, most of it was tested and proved to be inconclusive. The only firm evidence was hairs found in a mask found at Cheryl's apartment and the teeth impressions on the bite marks. The next day, a manhunt began. As news coverage began, Colorado investigators reached out to Florida and was like, hey, we had an escaped convict that likes to kill women. So, and what do you guys think, like, what do you guys think Florida said as a response?
It's hard to predict what Florida will say.
It's true.
Did they say, we also have serial killers?
No, they said there's no way Ted came down here, so.
Well, nah. How did he get there? From Colorado? There's no way. He can't walk.
It's crazy.
It's too far.
Crazy. So that was on the 15th of January. On the 9th of February, 100 miles east of Tallahassee, parents of 12-year-old Kimberly Leach called the Lake City Police Department. They were hysterical and said that Kimberly had disappeared while on school grounds. Kimberly's friend Priscilla last saw her getting into a car of a stranger, and she is unable to identify the car or the person.
Priscilla.
I know. Bundy had lured Kimberly into a stolen FSU white van. The days leading up to Kimberly going missing or getting abducted, a 14-year-old Leslie Permeter was actually approached by Ted, too. I don't have a picture of her.
Okay.
She was the teenage daughter of a Jacksonville police detective, and she was waiting for her brother to pick her up when Ted tried luring her into the van. He claimed that he was from the fire department and asked her if she was attending the school nearby. Thankfully, she was uncomfortable and found it strange that an on-duty fireman was wearing plaid pants and a navy jacket. It's really good context clues.
Yeah. I've worked at a fire station before. That's the uniform.
Okay.
Under the whole get-up, it's plaid pants and what was the other piece?
You tell us.
You don't know it? It's your uniform.
Not mine. I'm not a firefighter.
We're gonna just move on. Thankfully, Leslie's brother pulled up and she promptly got into the car. Feeling uneasy and suspicious, her brother actually followed Ted for a little bit and was able to write down the license plate. Again, their father was a police detective, so Detective James Parmenter looked at the license plate. It was registered to a Randall Reagan. When he reached out to him, he informed the detective that his plates had been stolen and he had already gotten a replacement. So then, their dad decided to take his kids to the station to show them a stack of mugshots, which Bundy's picture was among them. And they were able to recognize and both ID him as Ted Bundy. So they're starting to be able to, like, track him.
Did the police say there's no way he's here?
No.
Could mean.
I think this dad believed his kids.
Science says that Ted Bundy couldn't have made it there, so.
You're right.
It's not like
they had. In April 1978, 8 weeks after she was abducted, skeletal remains were found in Suwannee River Park. It would provide little evidence due to the advanced decomposition. Bundy had discarded the van and set out towards Pensacola, Florida, in a new stolen car. It was actually a VW Bug, the car that he was using in the beginning of his crime spree, so he's going full circle. An officer, David Lee, was patrolling and noticed him driving in West Pensacola around 10 p.m. on February 15th. He was suspicious of this car that he's never seen before in the area and ran the plates. They came back as stolen, and as he tried to pull Bundy over, Bundy started to flee, but suddenly, like he had done before, he pulled over and stopped. Officer Lee ordered him out of the car and on the ground with his hands in front of him. As he was getting handcuffed, Bundy rolled over and began to fight him. Bundy managed to fight his way free and run. Lee fired his weapon at him, which caused Bundy to drop to the ground, pretending he had been shot. When Officer Lee approached him lying on the ground, he was again attacked by Bundy, but this time Lee was able to overpower him, and Bundy was handcuffed and taken to the police station. At the police station, Bundy handed over a stolen ID and said that he was an FSU student named Kenneth Miser. I don't know how, I guess they must have released something, but the actual Ken Miser called the station and was like, hey, my wallet was stolen, and also I'm like cities away, so like there's no way. So at this point, the officers didn't know who they had in custody, and Bundy wasn't saying his name at all.
But they had pictures.
Yeah, but it's... I don't know that. So that. He was arrested on the night of the 15th. Bundy was in jail. He had a conversation with his lawyer on the 17th. And then he finally told them, hey, I'm Ted Bundy, what's up?
Is this the conversation with the lawyer? Because I'm loving his stance.
No. So this is... That's the district attorney in the center. He's reading off... his indictment.
Charges?
Yeah.
That's less exciting. This, in my mind, Ted is thinking of another way to escape. He's not listening to him. He's thinking, I bet you I could fit through that window.
Yeah. Well, so they actually, because this picture is from the press, they actually were filming this, and you can see, like, Ted's actual, like, mannerisms and like stance, and he's very like arrogant and thinks it's all bullshit.
It's all bullshit.
Yeah.
Does he think that he didn't kill people?
They don't have nearly enough evidence to get me.
Okay.
That's what I imagine he's thinking. I definitely got away with this.
Here, let me see if I can. Drew, I'm going to send you a link so you can share it.
On email, Facebook?
Facebook. Okay. There, that's the, I just sent you the video of it.
Are we to watch this?
Yeah, show it now because we can also listen to him.
The raw, unedited, full.
Is it going the indictment reading in a hallway?
Yeah.
Step out, Mr. Bundy.
Mr. Bundy.
What do we have here, Ken? Let's see. You always say an indictment, all right? Why don't you read it to me? You're on for election, aren't you?
Mr. Bundy.
You got it, didn't you?
Mr. Bundy.
You told him that you were going to get me.
He said he was going to get me.
Okay, you've got the indictment. It's all you're going to get. Let's read it. Let's go.
Theodore Robert Bundy, you are charged, indictment, two counts burglary, and two counts murder in the first degree, three counts attempted murder in the first degree. In the name of and by the authority of the state of Florida, the grand jurors of the state of Florida impaneled and sworn to inquire and true presentment make in and for the county of Leon upon their oaths do present that Theodore Robert Bundy on the 15th day of January 1978 in Leon County, Florida, did then and there unlawfully enter or remain in a structure located at 661 West Jefferson Street, the dwelling of Karen Chandler and or Kathy Kleiner with the intent to commit the offense of battery therein in the course of committing such burglary, said Theodore Robert Bundy did make an assault upon Karen Chandler and or Kathy Kleiner, contrary to section 810.02 Florida statutes.
Very good.
And your grand jurors being present in said court further gives the court to be informed and understand that Theodore Robert Bundy on the 15th day of January, 1978 in Leon County, Florida, did then and there unlawfully kill a human being, to wit, Margaret Bowman, by strangling and or beating her, and said killing was perpetrated by said Theodore Robert Bundy from or with a premeditated design or intent to effect the death of said Margaret Bowman, contrary to section 78204 Florida statute. and your grand jurors being present and set forth further give the court to be informed and understand that Theodore Robert Bundy on the 15th day of January 1978 in Leon County, Florida, did then and there unlawfully kill a human being, to wit, Lisa Levy, by strangling and or beating her, and said killing was perpetrated by said Theodore Robert Bundy from or with a premeditated design or intent to effect the death of said Lisa Levy.
My chance to talk to the press.
Contrary to section 78204 Florida statute.
I'll plead not guilty right now.
And your grand jurors being present in said court further gives the court to be informed and understand that Theodore Robert Bundy on the 15th day of January in Leon County, Florida, did then and there unlawfully attempt to kill a human being, to wit, Karen Chandler, by beating her about the head and knowingly or intentionally causing great bodily harm, and said attempt was perpetrated by said Theodore Robert Bundy from or with a premeditated design or intent to effect the death of said Karen Chandler, contrary to section 77704, 778204 Florida statutes. And your grand jurors being present in said court further give the court to be informed and understand that Theodore Robert Bundy on the 15th day of January in Leon County, Florida, did then and there unlawfully attempt to kill a human being, to wit, Kathy Kleiner, by beating her about the head and knowingly or intentionally caused great bodily harm, and said attempt was perpetrated by said Theodore Robert Bundy from or with a premeditated design or attempt to effect the death of said Kathy Kleiner, contrary to section 77704, 78204 Florida statute. And your grand jurors being present in said court further give the court to be informed and understand that Theodore Robert Bundy on the 15th day of January in Leon County, Florida, did then and there unlawfully enter or remain in a structure located at 431A Dunwoody, the dwelling of Cheryl Thomas, with the intent to commit the offense of battery therein. And in the course of committing such burglary, the said Theodore Robert Bundy did make an assault upon Cheryl Thomas, contrary to section 81002 of Florida statutes. And your grand jurors being present in said court further give the court to be informed and understand that Theodore Robert Bundy on the 15th day of January 1978 in Leon County, Florida, did then and there unlawfully attempt to kill a human being, to wit, Cheryl Thomas, by beating her about the head and knowingly or intentionally causing great bodily harm, and said attempt was perpetrated by said Theodore Robert Bundy from or with a premeditated design or intent to effect the death of said Cheryl Thomas, contrary to section 7704 and 78204 Florida statutes, contrary to the form of the statute in such case made and provided against the peace and dignity of the state of Florida. That is the indictment handed down by the grand jury. This is the capias for your arrest for burglary of the dwelling, 2 counts, murder first degree, 2 counts, attempted murder first degree, 3 counts. I am commanded to keep you in safe custody and bring you before the spring term of the circuit court 1978 for the pending court of this county for those charges that I just read to you in case number 78-670, State of Florida versus Theodore Robert Bundy.
Is that my copy?
No, it is not.
Here is your copy.
We have your copy. You have the copy.
I have a copy. How about the cases?
You'll get that.
I talked to the press. I mean, we've had our chance. We've displayed the prisoner now. I think it's my turn. Pardon me, which one?
I think that...
Well, listen. I've been kept in isolation for 6 months. I've been kept away from the press. I've been buried by you. You've been talking for 6 months. I think it's my turn now. All right?
We got a court order that there won't be any press interviews.
Sure there won't be any press interviews. You've given them out. I'm gagged. You're not.
Okay. The county writer will read through your
I'll be heard.
Isn't he a piece?
If you will, reading his rights and...
I feel like as it went on, he was getting a little bit nervous. I will say, when he first came out of the elevator and was talking, I was like, oh, what an infuriating man to spend time with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I took some notes because first I liked that he was kind of just like wandering around. And then at one point he like walked towards that back door and the guy was like, turn around, dude. What are you doing? Are you trying to get out?
If I was the guy reading the indictment, because he was standing like really close to him, kind of reading over his shoulder, I'd be like, get away from me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was doing that on purpose.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Do you guys remember in school when, like, it'd be your turn to read? Were you guys, like, ever, like, nervous that you would choke or something?
All the time.
He was reading so fast in front of cameras and shit. I'm surprised he didn't fuck up.
And it's so wordy. I know that legal stuff has to be very... like they don't want to
Theodore Robert Bundy. Theodore Robert Bundy.
Yeah.
His name's Ted.
So,
I have other things other that notes? I noted.
Okay.
He wasn't wearing handcuffs, which I thought was interesting.
I think he was.
His charges
surrounded by enough people that they were like, "It's okay."
I still feel like nowadays he would be in cuffs.
Yeah.
If he had killed, if he was being charged with that many murders or assaults, I think they usually, maybe not shackled, but they usually, I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah.
And then I noticed his grand entrance with the elevator. That was cute.
Mm-hmm. So the months following his arrest, they started compiling a critical evidence against him for Tim Leach's case and then also the sorority murders. Obviously, that was him getting indicted for the sorority murders, so they tried him there first for that. Also, while he was in jail awaiting the trial, the detectives across the country and also, like, news started connecting him with his other crimes, like, from Washington, Oregon, escaping Colorado, and then also he was charged in Utah, so he's already got a record. So, like, that's what he was talking about, like, you're muzzling me, pretty much, and, like, you've been talking to the press, like,
he said they're just dragging me.
Yeah, they're just dragging his name through the through the mud, rightfully so, with all the crimes that he's committed, but he wasn't a fan of it.
Clearly.
He was like, you guys are being mean to me.
Police.
May 1979, he rejected a plea deal that would have allowed him to avoid the death penalty in the sorority murders and Kim Leach's murder. But Bundy was so adamant about pleading not guilty, and the two murder trials would be spaced between the next 3 years. So June 25th, 1979, in Miami, Florida, this is where we... Sorry, Pat's moving next to me. This is where we're starting the sorority trial. It was a media spectacle because they allowed news cameras in the courtroom. And also, Bundy decided to act as his own attorney for this case.
Well, he is basically a lawyer.
I love when people do that. And then when we have, like, clips from it.
Yeah. He never finished law school. So I'm just going to point that out. Like, he went to law school, never finished. So,
he
like...
didn't need to. He was smarter than his professors, I'm sure.
He was basically already a lawyer at that point.
Being a true psychopath as he was, he thought that he could get off his crimes using his charm and his good looks, and he played up to the cameras and enjoyed the attention in the courtroom.
That's one of the thing. It seemed like he was really happy that the cameras were there. He was like posing and shit.
Yeah. I think because he's been able to hide what he was for so long that he's like, people are going to see the whatever like mask I put up and they're going to know that like I'm innocent, which he's not. Young women would actually come and attend court because to them, he simply didn't look like a killer.
I mean,
so
look
he
at
started
him.
Getting groupies.
Are we even sure? Like, listen, somehow he ended up in Florida. He's clearly a magician. And it's hard to know. I don't know what the point of that was.
Neither do I. Do you want to take that comment away?
No. I'm going to leave great. It.
Awesome. So the evidence against him was eyewitnesses, a bite mark analysis that matched his dental impressions. There's a photo there that they're like taking the impression of his mouth fibers linking him to the crime scene. Yeah, that's what
Lacey and I were both stick my fingers in Ted Bundy's mouth.
I think Lacey and I were both trying to figure out what was going on in that picture.
It looked kind of like a dental. Well, obviously they're in his mouth, but it looked a little bit like a dentist visit, but with people in the background watching.
I was thinking that he was like having a hissy fit and bit his tongue, and they were like, "Knock it off."
I guess if you are insisting you didn't kill people, you're not going to be biting the fingers that go in your mouth. I think the guy who put his fingers in there was very brave.
Yeah, without gloves, too.
That's yeah. Just... So, you know, brave and gross.
Yes. The most damning testimony was Nita's, the girl who came home to discover the massacre. She testified on what she saw that night of the murders, and she pointed out in open court that Ted was the man that she saw fleeing the house that night, which, I mean, it's an over and done with case, but it just feels like, how could she really have an eyewitness account if, one, it's dark, two, he's wearing a mask and moving fast, and three, all she saw was a profile of him. So, like...
Can I say, in some photos, he looks like Dennis from Sunny.
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah. It sounds like, Bailey, you're being one of those groupies you were talking about.
No, I fucking hate him. Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, like, so the one book I use to research is, like, interviews with him. And we can talk about it later, but, like, he just won't shut the fuck up. And it's all nonsense. Like, there's, like, he's just talking to talk.
Yeah, anyway, his own voice.
Yeah. Another testimony they had was an orthodontist, Dr. Richard Chevron. He described the bite mark injuries found on Lisa Levy's body. He used full-scale photos of the wounds to show to the jury. And the uniqueness of the indentations were pointed out and shown to be compared to Bundy's teeth. There was no question that Ted had made the bite marks. And, like, if you look close, like, Ted's teeth were very distinctive and kind of fucked up.
Yeah, I don't like them.
No. On July 24th, 1979, after 7 hours of deliberation, the jury found him guilty.
How many hours?
Seven.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say that took a while.
Like,
they had a lot of counts to get through.
Yeah. A week later, he had his sentencing trial on the 30th. His mother testified and tearfully pled for Ted's life. And when Ted addressed the court, he professed his innocence and claimed prejudice of the media for misrepresenting him. So, like, at first, he played into the media and was, like, enjoying it. And then he, after, like, a few years, like, he turned around and was like, nah, they, like, fucked me over. They, like, spread lies and everything. So
maybe when he saw that, like, he wasn't fooling them.
Yeah.
Against them.
He also claimed that the trial and the verdict were nothing short of a farce. Which is not a word I get to use very often.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Cowart handed down his final judgment, saying the court find that both of these killings were indeed heinous, atrocious, and cruel, and that they were extremely wicked, shockingly evil, vile, and the product of a design to inflict a high degree of pain and utter indifference to human life.
Isn't that the title of something?
Yes. Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile is the title of the Netflix, like, adaptation.
With
Lily Collins and Zac Efron. Yeah. He was sentenced to death twice for the murders of Lisa Levy and Margaret Bowman, along with the assaults of Cheryl Thomas, Karen Chandler, and Kathy Kleiner. The method of execution would be the electric chair. And to fully show you how, like, manipulative Ted is, Judge Cowart, who said, like, the quote I had just shared, like, shockingly evil and everything, once he was done sentencing Ted, he literally looked at him and was like, you're a bright young man. You would have made a good lawyer. I'd love to have you practice in front of me, but you want another way, partner. Which, like, you're sentencing this man for murdering two people, assaulting so many others, like, but he's a bright young man.
Yeah, I mean, that felt like a thought that you didn't need to say out loud.
No! Like,
and, I mean, I've seen people represent themselves in court, like, especially sovereign citizens, and I could see why someone who's had some schooling would do better and might be impressive in a way. But that's not, like, you don't need to say that out loud.
You don't need to say that in open court at a sentencing hearing while the victim's family is, or the victims that's are one of those there.
That you go home and you say, hey, honey, I'm home. Yeah, court was crazy today. The guy murdered a bunch of people, but also shockingly smart. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I was borderline impressed. He could have done a lot, but instead he decided to kill people. That's what you do with that comment.
Yeah.
So he's in prison. He's on death row. Kimberly Leach's trial suffered many delays, but finally on January 7th, 1980, in Orlando, the trial began. For some reason, Ted decided not to defend himself this time.
That didn't work the first time.
Yeah. And his defense attorneys, Julius Africano and Lynn Thompson, their strategy was to plead not guilty as reason of insanity. Which I don't know how that works if you've already gotten, like, convicted.
Yeah.
Prior. Multiple times, too, because, you know, he still has that, like, attempt at kidnapping conviction from Utah, but, you know. Unlike his previous trial, he was not using his charm. He was not, like, making jokes, because that's what he did in the sororities trial.
It didn't work that time.
No. And he was becoming increasingly agitated. He at one point stood up and yelled at a witness, because that looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Assistant State Attorney Bob Deckel presented 65 witnesses that had connected Ted to either directly or indirectly with Kim on the day of her disappearance. Evidence was presented to show fiber evidence that linked Ted's clothes and the van and fibers of Kim Leach's clothes, all found in the van and on his clothes. They also found a footprint in the soil beside where Kim's body was found that matched Ted's shoes. Where am I? Oh, there I am. Okay. 1 month later, the jury was sent for deliberation. February 7th, less than 7 hours later, they returned with guilty. And on the 9th of February...
I'm shocked.
I know. And then on February 9th, actually the second anniversary of Kimberly's death, they began the sentencing trial. During this trial, Ted was interviewing his defense's witness, Carol Ann Boone, who they had been friends previously and, like, were working at the Department of Emergency Services in Olympia, Washington when they met. I think it was just like a character witness. But they shocked everyone and started exchanging vows in open court.
Huh.
That's romantic. Yeah.
Which, according to Florida law, the verbal promise under oath was enough to seal the agreement, and the two were considered officially married.
It's like from Parks and Rec when Andy and April invited everybody for, like, a Halloween party, but then it was a surprise wedding.
Yeah.
New vibes.
Even though he got married, he was sentenced to death by electric chair as well, so he's now got 3 death penalty convictions.
Imagine being her, like, sister or something. How embarrassed would you be? You'd be so ashamed.
So again, Carol and Bundy met 6 years prior while working at a department, the emergency services department. They met while Bundy was like still dating Liz. So like, I think she was just waiting to have her chance with Ted. Yeah. In 1982, Carol gave birth to a daughter named Rose, which that's not her name anymore, naming Bundy as the father.
How?
So, yes, paternity was questioned because he wasn't allowed conjugal visits, but it's believed that he was able to bribe a prison guard to let him be with his wife.
That's annoying. He shouldn't be. I'm sure Rose is a lovely lady. But he shouldn't be given the opportunity to enjoy stuff.
Why was he able to just, like, why did he have this kind of sway over people? Freaking prison guard was, what could you give the prison guard for to be like, yeah, I'm definitely going to let you hook up with your lady friend?
He was,
like, what did he have to offer him?
He was,
I mean, Carol could have bribed him.
I imagine that he probably just sweet-talked the guard and was like, I've got married, I haven't been able to touch her yet. Like, just, I've got 3 death sentences. I'm never going to be able to be with my wife. We haven't been able to consummate. It would just be great if I could just one time.
And the guard should be like, it's because you killed ladies.
Yeah.
You don't get sex now.
Twice. Why would you give him, like, any kind
access
of...
Access to a woman?
Well, yeah, that. But then also, like, I wouldn't let him out of my sight.
Yeah. Maybe he didn't. Maybe that was how he bribed the guard. You want to watch?
So it in 1980...
Sorry, what? I was going to say, it is impressive that he was able to impregnate his wife on the first go-ahead.
Yeah. So we have to assume he either got her the first time or he was able to bribe guards more than one time
to
let this happen.
I really hope it was just the one time because otherwise I'm going to be disappointed.
Because they're really focusing on this one part.
I'm irritated.
That's cool. In 1984, guards of Florida State Prison discovered that he sawed through the bars in his window.
Oh my god!
Such a good escaper.
He didn't escape. They caught it before the attempt. But they were like, nah, buddy.
Where did he get a saw?
He probably used a spoon.
What? You think they called up the prisons he'd escaped for before and were like, guess what? We caught him.
Yeah. Look at us go.
Colorado was
15 hours.
Too trusting of him, but Florida's not messing around. 2 years later, in 86, Carol eventually realized he's guilty and divorced him.
I wonder what tipped her off.
She moved to Washington to raise her daughter, and it's believed that they changed their names to stay out of the public eye.
Well, yeah. Bundy comes, that last name comes with a lot of baggage.
A little bit. Over the next 9 years, he would fight and appeal his verdicts. He filed numerous appeals, including claims of an adequate defense. You were your own defense. And challenging the evidence used against him. His original execution date was scheduled for March 4th, 1986. This was postponed due to the appeal from his defense attorney. Eventually, he even appealed up to the Supreme Court, and that was denied. His execution date was set for January 17th, 1989. Through his time on death row, Stephen McLeod and Hugh Ainsworth interviewed him for his story and their book, which is actually the book I read. It's Conversations with the Serial Killer. Netflix also adapted it on as like a TV show, I think. Mundy felt like the news had steamrolled him over his truth and saw this book as an opportunity to prove his innocence. What I enjoyed about the book specifically was, so Stephen was interviewed him first and was like all buddy buddy and everything. Hugh did his own investigation first and then was like, nah, Ted, you're fucking with us and you're lying and like you need to start like being honest. And at one point in the book, Ted was like, the news, like, they just, they're trying to pin all these murders on me. Like, this is bullshit. Like, and Hugh's response is, I'll be the first to admit that law enforcement has, from time to time, stacked cases, given a killer credit for more than he's done, lumped 100 burglaries on a guy who doesn't care because he's going away for life anyway. But I defy you to show me one case in the U.S. where a man charged and convicted of several murders was really innocent. Fucking love Hugh. It was in these interviews that they, after like getting like kind of like stonewalled by Bundy of like, I'm not like, I didn't do anything, that they started talking to him and getting him to talk in third person about the crimes. So it wouldn't feel like he was confessing, which led to Bundy ultimately like owning up to shit. In third person, Bundy was able to was describing the killer of like what he would feel and why the killer did it based on his psychology degree. They played on his need to be the smartest man in the room. Bundy liked to blame society and culture as the trigger for the killer. He said women in the U.S., as they are marketed and used to sell things, are seen as objects of perfection, mm-hmm. which I feel like Bundy totally saw them as objects. He also, funny,
blaming it on the women.
Yeah, well, society, Drew. It's society's and culture's fault. Another fun thing that he mentioned was that he claimed that the killer received no pleasure from harming or causing pain to the person he attacked.
Well, that's from his expert psychological opinion.
Yeah, he also, like, explained in the book, he was like, killing was not part of the, like, it was a means to the end. Like, it wasn't like, it was assaulting and raping the women. That was like the point.
Okay.
You beat multiple women, but okay. Another thing that Hugh specifically liked to point out to Bundy was Bundy never had an alibi for any of the murders.
He didn't need one.
Yeah.
Too smart.
He never, like, even, like, when Hugh gave him a chance to be like, so where were you? Like, just give us an alibi. He would clam up. He never had one. Coming to the end of his life, he started actually confessing to murders in hopes of elongating his sentence. He also even attempted to help the Seattle PD catch the Green River Killer.
Can you imagine if you were, like, a different serial killer and this other guy comes in and he's like, I'll help you catch him. I'd be like, shut up. Get out of here. I mean,
he like was no help, so he was just being fucking annoying. Yeah.
I'd still be like, dude, shut up.
Dr. Bob Keppel was a Washington State Attorney General's chief investigator for the criminal division. Bundy trusted him and began really opening up. He claimed responsibility for all the murders suspected of him, and even some that were unknown. Bundy said he kept some of his victims' heads at his home as trophies.
Is there any evidence of that?
I mean, I think there was one that he said that he took back to Liz's house.
Okay.
But, like, I don't think we have a lot of evidence for that, because his victims were also like so decomposed. He also claimed to engage in necrophilia,
sure,
which if anyone doesn't know, just Google it.
He would have sex with dead bodies.
There it is. He also, Dr. Keppel believes that Ted is probably responsible for the deaths of at least 100 women, even though the official count is 36. which we've talked about in like previous episodes, just with like his confidence when like he supposedly started, and also just how fast he was going. Like, I fully believe there's more. Yeah. On January 24th, 1989, at the age of 42, Ted had his last meal.
What was it?
It was steak, eggs, hash browns, and toast.
Steak, eggs, hash browns. So he had breakfast?
He got executed in the morning.
Oh. I'd still ask for, I don't know, Thanksgiving dinner.
He didn't eat any of it. What did you say?
I'd ask for a Wawa gobbler.
Oh.
And then it'd be January. It's not the
right season, Drew.
Figure it out.
He didn't eat any of it.
Rude.
Probably because of the nerves. The night prior, he made 2 phone calls to his mom. And then on January 24th, approximately between like 7 and 7:15 a.m., he was strapped to the electric chair. Or Old Sparky, as Florida likes to call it. Sure. He addressed his final words to his lawyer, Jim Coleman, and his minister, Fred Lawrence. He said, "I'd like you to give my love to my family and friends."
I thought you were going to say his fans. I was like, okay.
Outside the prison, hundreds stood holding signs saying, "Burn, Bundy, burn," or "Tuesday, it's Friday." And they sold shirts and set off fireworks.
Which, you can buy one of those shirts. I looked it up on Amazon.
Oh, God.
$16.
Cheers erupted once it was signaled that he was dead. Oh, dear God.
I think it looks best on the white background.
Yeah. Scientists removed his brain and studied it for signs of physical abnormalities that could have explained his violent behavior, but nothing was found. His body was cremated in Gainesville, and no public ceremony was held. And I don't know if this actually happened, but he requested before his execution to have his ashes be scattered in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where he murdered at least 4 of his victims.
This is the face that I imagine the people made while he was requesting that.
Yeah, I knew about this before. Before I started like researching him fully, but like, how seriously do they have to take those like requests?
I mean, it's a request.
Okay.
I don't know, but like, I assume like, so that seems like a lot of work.
It seems disrespectful. You fucking killed 4 women there at least.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be spread there? Fuck you. You're at spread in the Atlantic.
Just bury him in a hole.
Yeah. Don't even spread him.
But yeah. That's the reign of Ted Bundy.
The reign.
Well, he was kind of a jerk.
Yeah. Kind of a jerk. Just a little.
My summary.
He was a lot of things.
Not a nice guy.
I think my biggest problem with him, especially with like reading the interviews, is like he would try to, you know, when here's a perfect similarity thing, you know, in The Office when like Michael goes, "Sometimes I start a sentence and like I don't know where I'm gonna like end up, I just like hope that like I find it when I get there."
Yeah.
That's how like Ted talks. He just starts a sentence to make it seem like he's smart. And I don't think
he just goes.
He, like, I don't know when he started fully confessing. I think it was like probably his like last year in prison. But like for 9 years, he was like, no, like it's not real. Like I'm innocent. Like this is, I can tell you what the real killer would do. They're trying to pin this all on me. You're fucking caught with 3 death penalty verdicts. Like just fucking tell the truth.
My like, favorite, I feel like probably right up until the end, he just did not believe that he could be punished for what he did.
I always enjoy when someone is like, I didn't do it, but if I did, this is what I would have done. It's like the that book, If I Did It.
Yeah. OJ. Was that OJ?
Yeah. And then, like, there was a lawsuit or something, and the book got taken off, and then the family redid it.
I was just going to say.
The if very, very tiny.
Yeah. I didn't realize that the family, like, got the rights to it or whatever. I thought it just ended when he was, like, told not to do it. And then one of my students is reading it this year, and I was like, how did you get that book? They'd never published that book. And then she showed me, and I was, like, reading about it. I was like, oh. The family was like, yeah, we're going to put this out there.
Yeah, they made the if very tiny.
So yeah, it just says, I did it.
Yeah.
You can't see it. It's not there. It's just, yeah. It's like an exclamation point. All right. Anyone else have any final thoughts? I'm really excited to never talk about Ted Bundy again.
I learned a lot. I really only had an overview of Bundy. So I learned a lot from you. Thank you.
You're welcome. I fucking hate him so much.
That's good. I think that's the right attitude.
Yeah. Next week is my case, and I'm excited to tell you guys about her.
Great. Ooh. I'm excited to move on. I think so. I was on Hulu, and they have. Do you guys know what the Stanford prison experiment was?
Yes.
This sounds familiar, but I don't remember.
It's when the guy took a bunch of college students and made half of them prison guards and the other half prisoners, and shit went wild.
Maybe I don't know.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, this might make a good episode. Also, the Russian sleep experiment would be cool, too, to cover.
That one I know about. That's
hard, if we could, like, I don't know about how much documentation is out there that Russia would allow, but, you know. So, maybe this was what it was. That's the end. Russell won't give us any more. All right. So maybe I'll be doing that next. But that was Sinister.
And we were sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening.